pretensions. Let's look at it this way. A man once said that the devil's cleverest ruse is to make men believe that he doesn't exist. All of us know from Hebrews 11 and 6, without faith it is impossible to please him. Because he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. All of us can recite that, can't we? We must believe that God exists. We must believe that God is God. We must believe he has a right to be God, and he has a right to tell us what to do. That's the basis of our faith, isn't it? But from the multitude of people, even among the highly educated, the idea of a devil is something to be received with an amused tolerance. All of us really kind of chuckle at the idea of a devil, don't we? Regardless of how highly educated you are, or how high you are in the church, or how high you have attained in any other way, we tend to chuckle at the devil, at the idea of a devil. So if we take Hebrews 11 and 6, without faith, it is impossible to please him, isn't it? For he that cometh to the devil must believe that he is, and he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. No, we turn it around. We believe that he is not. We aren't seeking him. He doesn't even exist. We ignore him. The opposite of what we must do to God, if we want to get to God, we must pay attention to him. The devil wants us to ignore him. He wants us to believe that he doesn't exist. So he's most successful today, even than those who still believe in God. They believe so little in the devil. Even though the same word of God that tells them how God operates also tells them how the devil operates, and that he's a very real person, just like God is a very real personage. So the first trick of the devil is that he travels incognito. You would never suspect that he was sitting next to you, would you? You would never suspect that he was in the church. You would never suspect that he's that good-looking lady in the back row, or he's that handsome gentleman in the front row. You would never suspect that he would lead the people of God down the rosy path of his own way. Because he doesn't appear as an angel of darkness. He appears as an angel of light. Right in the middle of the church. He's here today. He may be here in you, he may be here in me. But he's here, and you better believe it. He's at every assembly of the Lord's people. Because that's who he's working on. That's his field of operation, isn't it? So don't you believe him when he said, I don't exist, because he does. God said, I am he who is, when Moses said, who will I say? Well, you just say, I am. The devil says, I'm not. Forget it. I don't exist. I am a nobody. When you say, I am a nobody, you are the devil's disciple at the moment. You are somebody, aren't you, if you are a Christian? How much of a somebody are you? Now, you must not think more highly of yourself than you ought. But we ought to think highly enough of ourselves to know that God died for me. Christ died for me. I must have been important or he wouldn't have died for me. He didn't just do it for fun. I am important. You are important. You may be important in a different way than I, but that doesn't make you less important than I. You are important. But the devil says, no, you're a nobody. You're a nobody. I'm a nobody. What are you afraid of? We're both nobody. Are you going to tremble before somebody who doesn't exist? I'm not. I'm afraid of the devil. I'm a coward. Because I know what he can do to people. And I know what he can do to me. But you see, this thought that he gives us, and we like to keep it. It would be nice if there weren't a devil. Somebody said, oh, wouldn't it have been wonderful? Just yesterday I was talking to a young man and said, wouldn't it have been wonderful if Adam and Eve had never partaken of the fruit? Oh, it would have been wonderful, yes. That would have been heaven, wouldn't it? It was paradise, wasn't it, before they partook of the fruit? It would be wonderful if the devil didn't exist, so I pretend that he doesn't exist. Oh, he's very much alive. But if he can get me to believe this, then I have no enemy. If I have no enemy, then what happens to my defenses? Why do we spend billions of dollars today because we are afraid that Russia is going to come across the straits into Alaska and invade us and blow us up and take our country away from us? Because Khrushchev said that's what they were going to do. They were going to leave us in dust, weren't they? Now, he was clever enough to say, well, I really didn't mean we were going to annihilate you. I meant that you were just going to be left in the dust. We're going to pass you up so quick in the way we do things. Don't let him fool you. He meant he was going to swallow us up, and he would have if he could have. We still believe that today, and we spend billions on defense. If we didn't believe there was a Russia, what makes you think there's a Russia? Do all of you believe there's a Russia? All of you believe that? How many of you have been there? You believe it because you've been told it by people who have honest hearts, who tell the truth, don't you? You believe it. I was fortunate enough to have seen part of it. And it's not any smaller than they say it is. And it's not any less of a threat than they say it is. Those people do not believe in God, and I'm afraid of them. Because when people don't believe in God, they'll do whatever is convenient at the time. When it's the right time, they're wise enough to choose their time. Now, I'm saying the same thing about the devil. If you believe in the devil, and you must if you believe the Bible, then you want to watch him because he does time things just right to catch you when he wants you. But to deny the existence of Satan is to deny that there's a God. If there is no evil, there's no good, is there? If there's no darkness, there's no light. It's a contrast. To deny the existence of God is to deny that you can be saved. And if you deny that, then you will die in your sins, Paul says. You'll just die in your sins if you don't believe that Jesus exists and that he is your friend. If we have no enemy, we need no defense. And so we make no preparation for our defense. I believe this is why many times we want to protect our children from things in the world. I didn't want to see my boy, my little boy, when he was 3 or 5 years old, go off to school. Because when he goes to school, I don't know what he's doing 24 hours a day, like when he was home with me. Teachers don't recognize what power they have over children. I surprised a teacher one time when she said that she was reading the Bible in the classroom. I said, I don't want you reading the Bible to my kids. She looked horrified because she knew I was a Christian. She says, but this is the only chance some of these children will have to hear the Bible. I said, that's not your prerogative to take it upon yourself to read the Bible to anybody in the classroom. The school is not designed to teach religion. You are not a religious teacher. You have no business being so presumptuous as to think that I approve of your teaching my child in the classroom. She never thought of it that way. I said, do you realize that just by your selection of verses... Now, the Bible's good. You know I believe in the Bible. Talk about it all the time. The Bible is good, but in this case, you don't have that liberty. By the selection of verses, you can teach what you believe without ever saying a word about it. And I attempted to prove it to her. I think we did. But when I send my little boy off to school, he's going to be encountering all kinds of people. I don't want him to encounter some kinds of people. I don't want some little boy telling him in the toilet what sex is all about. But Jesus said, we're in the world, and Paul said, if you're going to get away from that kind of thing, you've got to get out of the world. So I must be realistic. I must build his defenses before he goes to school. I must build them at home, the defenses I want him to have against the devil before he encounters the devil. You don't want to start building your defenses after you've met the enemy. If you do, you're going to be in a bad way. But I'm afraid that's what we've done. I did not do an adequate job teaching my child about the things of his body before he went to school. So he listens to his friends in the toilet at school, and he believes that's all there is to it. Whose fault is it? It's my fault. Because I did not build up a defense, because I did not recognize that the devil was in the school just like he's in the church. Just like he's in the world. But do I refuse to send my child to school because the devil's there? That's ridiculous. The devil's no more there than he is here. The devil is everywhere. Do you believe that? I know a man that wrote a book that thick about how corrupt education is. I don't deny anything that's in it because I can't prove it. But that doesn't say anything to me. All that says to me that somebody identified that the devil was in the school. Well, so what? He's in the world, too. He's at my house, too. I stay away from my house because the devil's there? No. I resist him. I build up a defense for him in my home. I build up a defense for him at school. I build up a defense for him at work. I build up a defense against him at church or the assembly. Because he's everywhere. To think that he's just in the schools, or to think that he's just at work, or to think that he's in Washington, D.C., that's what he wants me to think. He's here, isn't he? Right here with us today. But if we make no preparation for the defense, then the devil can attack wherever he wants to. It's a wide open field, isn't it? And we give him the wide open field. Because we don't bring every thought into captivity to the knowledge of Christ so that we have a good defense against him when we encounter him. We get the same results if we believe that there wasn't another world as we believe there isn't a devil. If there's no other world, then there's no God. There's no Satan. And we're left to Satan. If there's no hell, there's no heaven, is there? If there's no eternal judgment, then there's no sin. If there's no truth, then we have bedlam, don't we? One man said, the fallen angel says, I am thy heaven, there's no other hope. The prince of this world says, there's no other world. The tempter says there's no judge. The accuser of the brethren says there's no pardon. The liar sums it all up by offering us a world without obligations or sanctions, closed upon itself, but recreated increasingly in the images of our complacence, in other words, our sleeping. So the liar says there's really no reality. And finally, Legion speaks up with blasphemy, there is nobody. The modern world, in our day, we have been tempted to elevate man and his accomplishments, like someone said about the humanistic view, that man can solve his problems all by himself. We deny that there's anything coming after death. When we die all over like Rover. We give ourselves an empire, and we drown ourselves in our own juice, so to speak. Satan disappears in his successes because he travels unseen. Unseen. For those who see the devil must exist, he set forth another ruse. If you believe he does exist, how does he exist? Some believe that he's nothing but horns, hoofs, and a tail, and a red suit. He's a comic character, isn't he? Do you know how we got that image of the devil? In the Middle Ages, they went around entertaining with plays, like we used to have the old, what did they call it? Somebody give me the word. Huh? Chautauqua. The old Chautauqua. They went around entertaining, and they had to depict the devil somehow or other. Most of the people who watched were illiterate, so they really didn't understand language well enough to identify the character. But they used these stories to present religious ideas. You see, if you present God as somebody or Jesus as somebody, you have to have a representation of the devil, too. And so they manufactured this one. In these little stories, virtue was always pursued by vice, prompted by Satan. And the nobility came to the aid of the virtue, which always won. You know, the old West movies, the little clips, the man with the white hat's going to win in the end. You can count that as soon as you see the picture. The man in the black hat's going to be the loser. We can readily identify it. So the devil was portrayed as the lowliest, and he was portrayed so that the lowliest could recognize him. A man dressed up in a red suit with horns and with a long tail and back and a pitchfork in his hand, anybody could identify that. That's the devil, isn't it? He is portrayed as the master of hell, the one in charge of tormenting souls in hell. Is that the way you believe the devil is? Where do you think the devil is today? Is he in hell? Where do you think he is today? To and fro, isn't he? On the earth. He's not in hell today. But we're fascinated by this traditional image because we have no thought that the real devil is at work in another form. That's all he wants us to do, is to be deceived into thinking that he's a comic character. Another idea about the devil is that he's just a myth. He's a myth like Santa Claus. He's a spirit like Santa Claus. Is he a myth or is he real? He hides himself in sin itself. You know, we like to sin, don't we? There is pleasure in sin. When he gives that pleasure, we look at the pleasure and we forget the results. Just like Eve looked at the fruit, she saw it was good to eat, she saw it was desirable to make one wise, and so she took of it, didn't she? But she didn't like the results. So the trick of Satan is very effective. We don't know what the real Satan looks like. I expect we'd tremble if we saw him. Sin awakens the feeling that's less fright than it is a desire. We want some more of the same when we have pleasure in sin. The devil knows that. The devil wants to make himself invisible in our temptation. He doesn't want you to think that you're under his power. The truth is that the devil is dangerous, but he's not visible. What man in the Bible was ever confronted by the devil in a readily identifiable form? Can you think of one man that the devil encountered face to face and said, "I'm the devil"? Jesus is the only man who did that he ever did that to. Wonder why he doesn't do it with us. Would we be able to stand? Would we have our defenses up as Jesus had his up? Why hasn't he encountered man face to face and said, "I'm the devil"? Now, you going to wrestle with me or not? There was an angel came to a man one time and wrestled with him, and the man wouldn't let him go till he gave him a blessing. Jay?
That the devil knew that Jesus would recognize him in any form.
Yes.
He knew it was fruitless
to
try to hide.
Right. Jesus already knew him. That's the point I'm trying to get across, that we ought to be able to see the devil in situations. We ought to be able to see him working. It's when he's where we are and we don't know him, we don't see him, that we're in trouble, isn't it? Let's take a look at some examples from the New Testament. Jesus looked at the scribes and the Pharisees. What did he see? Did he see God's people? No, he didn't see God's people. He saw the devil's people, didn't he? Why? Because they were his children, weren't they? They were doing more things for the devil than they were for God. And I'd like for us to, each one of us individually, take an account of our lives, just a normal week in our life. Put down everything you do. My wife had to do this one time when she had a medical problem. The doctor asked her to put down everything she did, everything she lifted, when she bent over, when she stood up, and all this, all her position in all things she did for those days. I wonder what would happen if we ran a calendar like that on ourselves, a diary. Somebody was highly excited about a diary, somebody getting a hold of a diary. I wouldn't want anybody to get a hold of my diary. A diary is a very personal thing. It's just like getting down in your heart if you really put on paper, which is very, very dangerous in my opinion, to put on paper everything you think and feel. But that's just for you so you can remember, isn't it? The diary is. What if I made a diary of my activities for last week and tabulated them up for God and against God? How do you think my tally would look? Jesus looked at the scribes and Pharisees and said, "You're a loser. You're a loser. Because you think you're godly, that's the very thing that keeps you from being godly." Jesus looked at Peter. Peter said, "Lord, you're not going to that cross if I can prevent it. Over my dead body you're going." Jesus looked at Peter and said, "Get thee behind me, Satan, because you don't know what God's like." Do we see that in our lives when somebody tries to persuade us to do things that are wrong, that it's really the devil? Maybe they don't know it. Maybe they're just the instruments. They don't know it. That's not the point. Do you see it? That's the point. Do you see it? The devil doesn't want you to see him in it. He wants you to blame it on them. Well, they are to blame to some extent. Peter was to blame to some extent, wasn't he? He let the devil use him, didn't he? He didn't have to be the one that did it, but he did. Peter looked at Ananias and Sapphira. He heard their testimony, and then he asked them, "Why does Satan fill thine heart? Why did you let Satan fill your heart up?" They didn't have any answer, did they? Do you recall what Ananias said back to Peter? Peter saw it. Here was a threat to the apostolic authority, a threat to their having the power to speak in Jesus' behalf, having the power to tell us how to be saved. And here was the power to break down all the trust that a congregation had in one another in one fell swoop. And that's all it takes, is just one little bad apple in a barrel to spoil the whole barrel, isn't it? Can I see that working in a congregation when I'm in the congregation? Can I see something as dangerous as Ananias and Sapphira? Can I do something about it? Can I call their hand like Peter called their hand and say, what are you trying to do? Can I see that Satan is behind it? Peter did not give Ananias and Sapphira a chance to repent, because it was God's will that they be stricken dead right there. Now let me demonstrate that with a more personal application, if you want to put it that way. Suppose next Sunday morning, since we talked about the collection today, Duane did, and since the command is that I'm to give as God prospered me, and I got a whale of a windfall this week, I bought a piece of land for $1,000 and sold it for $10,000, and I got a big windfall. When they passed the collection plate and I put my usual $10 in, the Lord struck me dead. And the Lord lets you know, like he did in Peter's case, like he did in Ananias and Sapphira's case, that that's why I was stricken dead. You know what the last verse of that little story is? And great fear came upon who? All the church. Church people were scared. Why? Because they had been doing the same thing, or thought about doing the same thing. Can we see it in our own lives? Can I see it when I'm cheating on God? Can I see it when I'm cheating on my wife? When I don't give her the kind of love that she needs, can I see it in my own life? Can you see it? When your kids are screaming out for love and you just ignore them and yell all the louder at them, can you see that the devil is there? He's working in you? I can see it in me many, many times. Now, don't get the wrong idea. I don't always see it any more than you do. But in our more serious moments, we can see it. I think all of us who are parents can look back and see where we were really deceived. We deceived ourselves, didn't we? When we raised our kids, we deceived ourselves into thinking we were doing a bang-up job. And one of them is in jail, one of them's in the drug center, and the other's out roaming around, and I don't know where he is. What happened? I didn't build up the defenses for him. I didn't give him anything, any ammunition to fire against the enemy. I sent him out into the wilderness with nothing more than John the Baptist had, a leathern girdle. Paul saw elements undermining the teaching that he was trying to give the deputy. And Paul looked him right in the eye and he said, "You full of all subtlety and all mischief, you child of the devil, thou enemy of all righteousness." Man, I'll bet that man got mad, don't you? Oh, I'll bet he just roasted. Who is this man up here calling me all these names? Pretty strong language, wasn't it? Suppose I said to you, "You're a child of the devil." Would you believe it? Would you believe it? Paul knew what he was talking about. That's the difference between me and Paul, and there are a lot of others. But Paul Paul could look right down in his heart and he knew that he was a child of the devil. But if you act like a child of the devil and I came up to you and said, you are a child of the devil, you are sowing discord, you are...